Thank you. Thank you so much for everyone to stay at the end for today's session. So I'm Wei Zhang, I'm a soil physicist, and I work with Hui Li, he is a soil and environment chemist. So basically today I'm going to report to you three studies that has been done by our students or visiting scholars. So Jeremy Bossel did the greenhouse experiment, which I'm going to talk about. Ya Hui Zhang did the hydroponic study. And Wen Jingui, he was a visiting scholar in my lab from Zhejiang University. He did the post-harvesting washing experiment. So I will talk about three experiments in my presentation today. So why we're interested in pharmaceuticals? We know that antibiotics and other pharmaceuticals are considered as emerging contaminants. They have been widely detected in soils, water, and sediments. And the driver for this proliferation in the environment is the overuse in the human medicine and animal agriculture. And US and China are the two largest users of antibiotics, of a majority of which are used in animal feeding operation. So those antibiotics or pharmaceuticals used in animals are released into manure, which eventually applied to the agriculture field. The other major source of environment release of pharmaceuticals are from human use, which end up in the wastewater treatment plant. And Dr. Peterson just gave an excellent overview about environmental pathways. So those pharmaceuticals in the wastewater treatment plants are not going to be removed efficiently, so they end up in the biosolids, which you then apply to the agricultural land or in the treated wastewater effluent. And then we also call this reclaimed water. So it's going to be used to irrigate our crops. So those are the two major ways the pharmaceutical can get into our agro-ecosystems. So once those antibiotics in the environment, they can exert selection pressure on bacteria to develop antibiotic resistance. So antibiotic resistance has become a huge health problem. And it's estimated that if antibiotic resistance continues to develop at a current rate, by 2050, antibiotic resistance is going to cause up to 10 million deaths every year, the majority of which is going to happen in Asia and Africa. We also notice that Europe and America also have significant numbers. So essentially, antibiotic resistance is becoming a grand global health challenge. And we need to think about ways we can deal with that. Now I want to shift the topic a little bit to talk about another grand challenge and we are facing today. And some of you may be in the opening keynote given by Sandra. So clearly, we're facing this water scarcity across the global scale. And David Lard also talked about water scarcity issues. So here I give you a water stress map in the United States. As you can see, where are the regions we're going to see the increased use of reclaimed water. We also need to take a note that about 56 million acres of U.S. cropland are irrigated. And if you look at where those areas are, of course, we see California Central Valley and Northern Texas, Mississippi Valley. So if we coupled with the increased use of reclaimed water and the irrigation distribution across the nation, we can see we're going to see the problem with the potential impact of reclaimed water use in irrigation. I also want to make a note that with all this irrigated land, about 51% are using sprinkler system. So that's going to have something related with the greenhouse experiment we did. So all these challenges I just mentioned, I would argue that creates problem in the nexus of food, energy, water, and soil. So it's kind of interesting that Dave Lard started with this Alexis of food allergy and water, and I kind of come back to this same again, kind of ties the today's symposium. But I add soil into this Alexis, because the soil is a foundation components of all this food production and water resources and energy production too. And we're going to particularly focus on the coupling between the soil water quality and the food quality and the safety. But I also note that actually irrigation uses a lot of energy. You probably know that depending on where you are, about 10% of energy consumption in the agriculture area is used for irrigation. But we're not going to touch on that topic in this in my presentation. So our goal in our project is to understand the food safety and the human health risks of crop production with contaminated soil and the waters. And then hopefully by understanding the mechanism of those, we can design the risk mitigation strategies. And to really understand the risk, we really need to understand the uptake mechanism and also the residue level of a pharmaceutical in the agricultural crops. So in our work, we focus on the pharmaceutical uptake by vegetable. And you probably, a lot of you are familiar with the food pyramid, right? And a few years ago, USDA changed the pyramid into plate. So here's a My Plate logo. As you can see, the vegetable is a major portion of a healthy diet. And in the United States, a fresh vegetable with minimal processing are preferred. As you can see in this diagram, as you can see, the amounts we consumed in terms of the fresh vegetable are the largest. And so in our work, we're trying to understand what are the mechanisms of control the accumulation of pharmaceutical in the vegetable, and what kind of agricultural practice could influence the accumulation and the residue level of pharmaceutical in vegetables. So now let's talk about our first study. So in the study, we did a hydroponic study to look at the uptake mechanism of pharmaceutical by vegetable. So we seeded lettuce on a paper towel, and then after a few days, we transferred them into a hydroponic solution. We grow the lettuce for 22 days, and after which we add the pharmaceutical into the nutrient solution, and then we track where the pharmaceutical are moving into the vegetables, whether they are in the roots or shoots, and also we track pharmaceutical concentration in the water for over 144 hours. So this work was done by Yahui Zhang. So some of you may in the audience for her presentation this morning. And once we grow the lettuce in the nutrient solutions, and we would take the lettuce samples, and also we took the water sample, and then we extract the pharmaceutical using Crutcher's method. And we analyze the pharmaceutical concentration in the plant sample and in the water sample through the RCMS-MS. So the next two slides are going to be for those hardcore analytic chemists. So I'm not an analytic chemist, but I figure you probably want to hear some information on that. So basically, this is the workflow for our solid phase extraction. So essentially, we flush the samples through the HRB cartridge, and then we track, then we eluted the pharmaceutical with the methanol, and then we analyze the concentration in the RCMS-MS. With the Crutcher's method, and so that's for our plant samples. I also have soil here because we use the same method in our greenhouse experiment in which we grow lettuce in the soil pots. And so basically we use the same method. So this method has been published in a journal article. So I'm not going into much detail on this method. So basically, we extract the compounds with acetone nitrate and methanol mixtures, and then we go through the solid phase extraction again, and then we elute it with then we basically separate the superlatent and analyze it with RCMS-MS. And if you have some question about this analytic method, feel free to talk with Hui Li and Yahui during the discussion or after the symposium. So now I want to just highlight some funding we are getting, because Hui promised you that I'm going to talk about how the pharmaceutical sorption with the roots going to influence their uptake to the shoots. So here we are, and so let's look at the situation when the pharmaceutical has a low sorption affinity with the root powder. So basically, in this study, we did a sorption isotherm with the dried root powder. So that's the isotherm at the bottom. On the x-axis, we have the aqueous phase concentration. On the y-axis, we have the adsorbed pharmaceutical in the solid phase of the root powder. So for these two compounds, caffeine and carbamazepine, basically you have a really minimum absorption. So that's why we see their uptake in the shoots, which was represented by the green circle here, and increasing over time. The concentration in the roots was represented by the red circle here, decreasing over time. I also want to mention the water concentration is on the left y-axis, so that's the black triangle goes down. So clearly we see the trends that we have a rapid translocation of these two compounds from the roots to the shoots over just about 144 hours. So next, we're going to look at the situation when the sorption was high. So we have three compounds here, and you can see the sorption of oxytetracycline and lamotrigine and trimethoprim. So they all have a pretty high sorption with the roots. So that's why we don't see much translocation of the compounds to the lattice shoots. And we also see they have a good amount of accumulation in the roots. So next is a very interesting case, and I personally actually kind of puzzled about this. And so here we have lincomycin, tylosin, and monacin. Clearly, for tylosin and monacin, they have a pretty good absorption to the roots, so probably that can partially explain why we don't have a good translocation to the shoots. But the interesting case is for lincomycin, and we don't have a strong sorption. Well, actually, we have no sorption to the roots, but still we don't see the translocation of lincomycin to the lattice shoot. I think that may be involved with some biological mechanism. We know that there's some pores within the plants, and Dr. Peterson gave a very nice view about the biological mechanism may be involved in the transport or uptake of pharmaceuticals. So one thing I want to point out about this aquaporin, we know that in the cell membrane there's this kind of a channel that allows the water to move through or some small molecules. So for this aquaporin and the size limits that allow the which can be passed through this channel is about 270 Dalton. And so for lincomycin, its molecular size is about 400 Dalton. So we think probably that lincomycin can be size included from aquaporin. With tylosin and monacin, and if they are moving through this plasmodesmata, which has a size limit about 7,000 Dalton, and it's very close to the molecular size of tylosin and monacin. So we think maybe there may be this kind of a pores within the plants that may have some role in terms of how the molecules of pharmaceutical are moving through the plants. So that's actually a question I want to ask Dr. Peterson about, whether you have thought about other kind of plant mutants to look at this kind of uptake mechanism. So this kind of question interests us from our study. And so I want to talk about the second project we did. So this was done by Gemini Basso. She was a master's student in my lab, graduated last August. And so basically here we want to look at how different irrigation methods going to influence the accumulation and residue level of pharmaceutical in vegetable. If you probably remember earlier talk about the irrigation practice in the United States, about 51% is done by a sprinkler system, and the rest is done by some form of surface irrigation. So in this study, we did it in the greenhouse because the condition can be well controlled. So let me talk a little bit about the irrigation system we use. So this system was built by Sun Hu Jiang, my PhD student. So essentially, we have a two reservoir tank that contains either pharmaceutical containing water or pharmaceutical free water. And then we have two distribution lines that goes to a overhead treatment and a surface treatment. With overhead treatment, basically the emitter is on top of the lattice plant. So we're simulating the sprinkler spraying irrigation in the field. With the surface irrigation, basically we place the emitter on the soil surface. So that's kind of simulate the surface flooding irrigation or drip irrigation, because the irrigation water never get in contact with the canopy of the ladders. And we did the study for 5 weeks. So we took the plants, water and soil sample every week, and then we measure the pharmaceutical concentration using the method I just mentioned before. So we did a study on this 11 pharmaceutical, which include a painkiller and a fever reducer acetaminophen, and then a stimulant caffeine, and the rest are antibiotics. The reason we choose all those pharmaceuticals is because we want to have a range of molecular size and a range of water solubility, and of course also the low KOW. So let's look some data. And we measure the pharmaceutical concentration in the tank water over time, and using the solid phase extraction I just mentioned to you earlier. And obviously, with any analytic method, there are some variations throughout the experiments. Our hope is that by tracking this, we can kind of take those errors into consideration at the time when we're doing the mass recovery or mass balance calculation. And so let's look at some data. And so I just have a few highlights on the results we're getting. So first, I give you an example about acetaminophen, which it represents the pharmaceutical with the low molecular size and the high water solubility. And what you see here is in the lattice shoot, the concentration of acetaminophen was not different under different irrigation method. And there's no difference in the root concentration of acetaminophen either. And this is understandable probably because the molecule is highly water soluble, so even though they have additional contact with the lattice canopy and the overhead irrigation, but the compounds are not likely going to stick on the lattice leaf. And of course, with the soil, we didn't actually really in the overhead irrigation, all the pharmaceutical solution drains back to the soil. So we don't really expect any difference here, but our real interest is on the lattice shoot, because that's what we consume as consumers. And the interesting case is for monacin, which has a high water molecular weight and has a low water solubility. So here we see the concentration in the lattice shoot was much higher with the overhead irrigation, because this additional exposure through the through the leaves. And same is true for tylosin. We see a consistently higher concentration of tylosin on the leaves under overhead irrigation compared to the surface irrigation. So basically, we found that the pharmaceutical with a high molecular weight and a low water solubility had a greater concentration in the shoots and the overhead irrigation than the surface irrigation. So this is interesting. I mean, the although we are still kind of looking into our data, trying to connect that with the chemical property of the compounds and trying to whether that can be connected with uptake mechanism. But just this message, I think, is relevant to farmers when they are trying to irrigate their crops using reclaimed water. Because depending on where you are, if you know something about your water, then you can choose the appropriate irrigation method. As I said, we did the mass balance calculation. So here I show you the results of the final week, the week 5. So the y-axis is the percentage of the pharmaceutical that was injected into the system, which we recovered at the end, which includes the concentration in the soil and then in the lettuce root and the shoots. So clearly, the maximum amount we can recover is only actually roughly around 50%. So there's a lot of things going on that decrease the pharmaceutical concentration in the lettuce and in the soil. And there may be degradation, there may be metabolism, there may be irreversible sorption depending on the compounds that you're talking about. So I think that's something we should look into further. So with that, I want to talk the last component of my talk, which is a post-harvest washing experiment. So this is kind of related with, if you have the pharmaceutical in the vegetable, how are you going to deal with it? So whether you could develop some strategy that you can reduce the residue level in the vegetable. So of course, the first thing we're thinking about, we could just wash them, right? So this is just the beginning of our work into this area. So we did some pretty straightforward post-harvest washing experiment. So basically, we get the letters from a local grocery store, then we spray the pharmaceutical solution to the lettuce, to the vegetable, and so basically trying to absorb the pharmaceutical to the vegetable, and then we air dry out of 24 hours, and then we wash it with different practices. So for lettuce, we either wash it with pharmaceutical free water, or we don't wash the lettuce at all, or we wash them for 10 or 20, 30 minutes with or without surfactants. With the spinach, we again wash them with pharmaceutical-free water, or we just wash them for 10, 20, or 30 minutes. At the end, we would wash them in the running water for 2 minutes, and then we cut the vegetable into pieces, and then we freeze-dry them, and then we grind them into powder, which then be analyzed with the Creatures method I just mentioned earlier. We also did a study on tomato. And again, deposit the pharmaceutical to the tomato, then we wash them. So here we only have four treatments, pharmaceutical-free water, no washing, or wash it for 10 minutes with or without surfactants. Okay? So let's look at some data. So here I show you the initial residue of pharmaceutical without washing. So as you can see, for all the pharmaceutical we tested, this initial residue of pharmaceutical concentration varies with the pharmaceutical type and the crop type. And of course, we have to look really back to the chemical property of those compounds, see if we can link the mechanism with this observation. But I agree with Dr. Peterson or Hui Li in responding to Baosan's a question about whether we are there yet in terms of connecting the dots. I agree that we are not there yet, so we need to do more work in this regard. And so in terms of crop type, that's an interesting case because you can always see the higher residue with the letters. And I think that's something interesting. And so here we have some microscope image with the vegetable surface. So the AB are the scanning electron microscope image of spinach and lettuce, and the C is the confocal microscope image of a tomato surface. D and E are the this one is the bright field microscope image of a tomato surface. This one is actually a artificial tomato surface we made using a polymer. The idea with that is you want to create a surface that with a uniform surface feature, then you can use it repeatedly again and again and again. So by varying the chemistry of the water. So the one thing I want to point out is with this lattice leaf, as you can see there, it's more rough compared to the Spanish. So we think this may play a role in terms of how pharmaceutical residue are accumulated on the vegetables. So this is some area we are really interested in, and we are continuing in this line of a direction. So now let's look at some results. So basically for the next three slides, I have two panels. On the left panel, you will see is the concentration of pharmaceutical in the vegetable for different kind of a pharmaceutical and a different kind of a washing treatment. So, and the red column is the treatment without washing. Okay. So, and on the right, we define a washing efficiency. So basically that's the removed pharmaceutical percentage and the different kind of treatment. So here what you see is that for Spanish, washing for 10 minutes was sufficient to remove large percentage of pharmaceutical. And this is interesting because in commercial processing, believe it or not, washing just with water for 5 or 10 minutes is a very typical practice. Okay. And then for lattice, we found that if you have a surfactant in the washing water, if we look at this panel, actually it only improved washing efficiency for several pharmaceuticals. So it's not improving it for all the pharmaceuticals. It probably improved it for lincomycin and this sulfadiazine. So, and also we found that there's no difference for the longer washing time with the surfactant. So increasing washing time could also achieve similar efficiency, but this cannot be practical, especially with the commercial processing, because they want to the produce washed rather in short time. And so the last slide I have is about tomatoes. So here we have with or without surfactant treatments. So again, we found that the presence of surfactant did not really improve washing efficiency for most of the pharmaceutical from tomato. And we are just in the beginning of this kind of a research, so we think the washing could be further optimized to improve the efficiency. So with that, I just want to summarize what I have talked about, and I think the central message is that there is a management choice that we can make in terms of how we grow our crops, how we irrigate them, and afterwards how we process them, which can reduce the pharmaceutical residue in the vegetable. So finally, I want to thank the funding agency from USDA and MSU Project Green and our collaborators. Thank you. I don't know. No, the tank is covered, so we don't think there is evaporation. And yeah, in some cases, for example, for this carbamazepine, and it reached about 50. And I think there may be error in terms of when the student is making the solutions. So when they are pipetting, because she was pipetting a small amount and diluted into a large volume. And there may be that, and then there may be just error associated with the analytical procedure, because 20 or 30% of error in terms of the replicate, sometimes it's not that uncommon with this kind of procedures. But Hui and Yahui may have a better answer on that. Yeah, so that means that there may be some degradation in, but yeah, with carbamazepine is relatively stable in water, right? Yeah.
If they want to study your student,
based on
this concentration, based on what?
Based on?
Yeah, they should have been found in the wastewater.
Oh, yeah. And we try to get as closer as to the environmental relevant concentration as possible, while still be able to detect the concentration in the ladders and soils. And I think this concentration is still high than what we could typically find in the environment. But you have to do what you can do, right? Work with what you can have in terms of the instrument compatibility. And in fact, this one we are presenting is actually just one trial. In the other trial, we use like 50 ppb. So this one we use 30 ppb. So we did two trials. And I'm hesitant to actually go lower than this, because and then you are kind of suffer with the accuracy in terms of analytical procedures and
whole issue, isn't it? I mean, these hydroponic studies, high concentrations to make up for analytical deficiencies have been in the literature for years. And we all understand the idea, is there a possibility of these chemicals getting into plants? I think that's been thoroughly researched, and the answer is unequivocally yes. And we also know, I'm sure anyone who does any plant physiology, that you can run over membrane selectivity. You increase the concentration of an element, a solute high enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no appreciation for high concentration hydroponic studies at all. Okay? I do have a lot of appreciation for field work that has been done with real effluents that have been shown to have environmentally relevant organic concentrations in them, growing vegetables that were then analyzed, and guess what? They don't find anything.
Well, yes,
that's
on the research that shows up
field of body. Oh, I'm familiar with that literature. Yeah, it's trash.
Yeah, and I'll try it already there.
Well, it's in the literature, but that doesn't save it from being trash.
Yeah, you will be like, we published these chemicals already in the meatball fraction. They use like the red, what we call agronomy grade applied about solid. And these chemicals is getting the plant.
I produced that literature, and there has been one researcher who has found it in the plant. They used a very low percentile solid, very high water percentage. But all the other studies that have looked at it, for all the other chemicals, do not find it in the plant. Wouldn't that raise some issue in your mind about the quality of that work?
Unless
you've done
all of that. Yeah, I saw that a couple of times.
So I think we enter into the phase of the discussion. Were there any remaining questions on my presentation?
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. I think that's the present time. I just jumped in.
I got a question.
Yeah.
We did similar work dealing with watching lacquer finish. We tried to use the few nanoparticles. The farmer used few nanoparticles to put on vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So we were asked to develop a handy, quick analytical technique. We are working on that now. Second, in the watching solution, because we are likely to work with food settings. They know exactly how to watch their vegetable commercially. Often they worry about packaging.
Yeah.
Like that. So in their washing solution, they often add oxidizers, chlorine. You didn't present the data. I think that's the way you should to go.
Yeah.
Some oxidizer, some surfactant, then you soak in that type of solution. If your chemical in there, I know capmethamine very resistant to oxidation, maybe other compounds,
mm-hmm.
maybe oxidized.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. We are also working with food safety faculty and looking at the washing part. We know that indeed they add like oxidizer and a disinfectant into their washing water in the hope that that will reduce the pathogen loads in the vegetable. Well, believe it or not, after all those years of research, they are still not very successful in terms of control the pathogen with all the added disinfectant. But I think that's maybe with a lot of a commercial processor or processing facility, I don't know how many will add like oxidizer or disinfectant. A lot of them just use water to wash it like 4-3 times. And but I agree that, and that's something definitely we can look into.
They do use oxidizer.
Yeah. No, we haven't done that study. Yeah, we can have a lot of wonderful ideas, but we're limited by the students who can do the work. She's a master student, and I think she did a wonderful job in terms of getting all those data within that short period of time. But I agree, the nutritional value, just as Bao San showed, it's really important. Not only on the food safety side, also the nutritional value of your food products, and because that ties back to the human health too.
This question probably for you. Like when we do zero-net particles, we do try to observe penetration with the time. We use image, we use the matter, we use the same type of plant, and with time, we see the zero-net particles
So that was actually kind of interesting when I saw the results presented by Dr. Gao about her compounds in the vegetable that grown in the greenhouse or in the field after the washing, they did see the reduction. So assume some of them are on the surface, maybe I don't know the answer to that question, but I was told by the plant biologist, as depends on where the compound is in the tissue, by washing, you can actually remove some. But with the cuticle, that would be relatively hydrophobic compound, right?
Yeah.
And some would be in like a stomata, which doesn't require a hydrophobicity to penetrate. They can just get into the stomata and get into the intercellular space, and those kinds of things maybe can be moved by washing. But that's an interesting question.